Ed Breslin fulfills every college basketball fan's fantasy of being an NCAA Division I coach. In his new book, The Divine Nature of Basketball, My Season Inside the Ivy League. The book describes a season spent as a virtual coach in the Ivy League, shadowing head coach of Yale's men's basketball, James Jones. It's sports journalism in the tradition of George Plimpton, but above all, it's a celebration of basketball, of participation in life, of gifted mentors and coaches, and of the proper approach to collegiate athletics. Over the course of the season, Breslin comes to understand what its coaches, like James Jones, their priorities in order, who realizes those lessons learned in sports are often enduringly important and transferable to other areas of our lives. It's a great pleasure to welcome our good friend Ed Breslin back to the program. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, Joe. It's nice to be here.
It's a delight to have you with us. So what brought you to this program at Yale in particular?
Well, what happened, Joe, is I started to attend a lot of basketball games around 2005, 2006, 2007, even some games up here at your alma mater, St. Rose. And I realized that basketball had meant a lot to me as a young boy and had taught me a lot of skills that I had transferred to my writing career. And I wanted to explore what it was like to be a head coach in college basketball, in Division I, and see what it's like up close and sort of personal. And that's what I did. I approached first James Jones's brother, Joe Jones, who was the coach of Columbia. And their gymnasium is exactly 30 minutes a walk from my apartment in New York City. And Joe then left after we had preliminary discussions about doing the book with Columbia. Joe left, and I knew that his brother coached at Yale, and I happened to go up there because a friend told me they had the most fabulous gymnasium. And while there, I made contact with his brother, James, and before I knew it, we were sitting down to lunch to discuss doing this book.
You wanted to be basically a fly on the wall.
Yes, and also to feel the exact emotions and be under the same pressures and tensions that the head coach was under, and also the assistants.
How do you reach that point where you feel the same pressure? Because, I mean, that's more than just fandom at that point.
What I did was attend almost every practice. I missed very few practices all year, and I got to know the players very, very well. I got to know the systems, both offensive and defensive, that Coach Jones employed. And I would watch the games after having been sitting in on scouts, sitting in the locker room on whiteboard sessions, listening to strategy sessions, and watching how they prepared the team for each upcoming opponent. And then I would see how it held up during the game, Joe. And I would feel the absolute devastation of a loss and the ecstasy of a win. And that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to have that structure again of a season sort of engagé right there with the team.
What do you think a coach like James Jones, and I assume you could say this just about any coach, but for him in particular, and because you spent so much time with him, what do you think is on the line each game? What is he feeling is what the of what is so important at that moment?
I think what he's feeling is important is for the players to learn to achieve individual excellence and to collaborate in achieving collective sort of efficiencies and outstanding coordination with another person and persons. And I think that that lesson from basketball is transferable to many, many phases of later life in business or in the professions or in academic circles or wherever you happen to end up. The game teaches a great many useful skills and useful people skills that stand you in good stead the rest of your life. And I think Coach Jones tries to instill that feeling of individual excellence and collective cooperation.
Is it different, do you believe, playing for Coach Jones and being a Bulldog, a Yale Bulldog, versus being on the Syracuse team or playing for Duke or playing for Ohio State or UNC or any of the larger schools and programs?
I think the larger schools and programs have a monetary factor that they have to fulfill, the big gymnasiums, the pressure from the alumni. I think the Ivy League is the last bastion of throwback amateurism in Division One, where the players are under pressure, but they're also under heavy academic pressure. Not that they aren't at Duke, at Syracuse, and the other big-time programs, but I think in the Ivy League, the emphasis is more on amateurism and not so much on the monetary factors. When you have to fill a 30,000-seat gymnasium or a 25,000-seat gymnasium, and when you have the alumni pressure that these schools have to win NCAA championships, I think it puts the whole enterprise in a different key, and not really a good key.
So it's certainly putting more of a focus onto the kids, yeah. More of a focus onto the program and to making them better athletes, better people. That was one of the things that struck me in the book is how much they're working on overall skills and life, so that when you leave this court at some point and perhaps never play again anywhere else, yeah, that this is going to stay with you.
Yes, and also in the Ivy League, Joe, they have 4 years together. And in the bigger schools and the programs now, the pattern is to recruit blue chip players, the outstanding players in the country, most of whom stay only the one season.
Right.
So you don't get the cohesion. This is true also in professional sports. If you're old enough to remember when teams would be together before free agency, they would achieve a really intense cooperation with each other. And in basketball, that's very key because it's only five players, men or women, coordinating tremendously to get this one sort of cohesive effect, like five dexterous fingers on one crafty hand, as it were. They have to have that integration. And I think that is what the 4 years together can sponsor and foster in the students. As also, they're there for the 4 years of the education, which is great.
So Yale tomorrow plays Columbia. Here is a team that is 17-13. So how much of it is about winning?
Well, there's pressure to win in the Ivy League. They don't want no one's setting out to lose games. I think Yale has pressure on it tomorrow night to win the rubber match, just as Columbia has. One of the points I wanted to make in the book was that the athletes in the Ivy League in Division One are tremendous athletes. They're just sometimes not the 1 year and done pros and waiting that you get at the top flight programs in the country that compete for the national title. And I think tomorrow Columbia and Yale will go at it in a rubber match to see who can go on to the semifinals in the collegeinsider.com tournament. And it's a nice experience for the kids to have a postseason run like this.
You get the sense in the book about this, and I just want you to explain it a little bit because it's a lot of its personality and a lot of its dynamics, isn't it? I mean,
yes.
a kid, a lot of it comes from the top down. So it's the coach, and James Jones is the coach. So a lot of it comes from, most of it comes from him, and the team of assistants that he puts in place, and then it's up to the individual kids to either relate to that or not relate to that. And it's fascinating to see what kind of kids can make it in the program and what kids don't make it in the program.
Yes, you see that a coach like James Jones, who is tremendously talented and has tremendous motivational skills, is like an orchestra conductor. He sets the tone and the orchestra has to play together. And some of the kids will meld beautifully into his system, embrace his system, and be a part of his team. And other kids can have difficulties. And I think that same thing will hold true when they get into their professions and their careers later in life, that they can learn to meld with other people, to cooperate with other people, to the give and take of group dynamics. And I think that is one of the great strengths that a basketball coach can impart to any players he or she has, this ability to be individually responsible and excellent, and also to coordinate in a collective effort that's based totally on efficiency.
You titled the book The Divine Nature of Basketball. Why that title? And talk a little bit about the divine.
I think it's divine because, not just because it was invented in the YMCA, but because basketball has been for me, for all my life, the antidote to SAD, seasonal affective depression. It was invented by James Naismith to fill in between the end of football season and the beginning of spring baseball season, and it was designed to be played indoors in a warm atmosphere with the minimum of violence and to keep the kids in the Northeast winters, since it was invented in New England, from becoming too victimized by cabin fever or rambunctiousness and excess energy. It really was, Joe. And it's, you know, that people have talked about seasonal affective depression, the short days, the darkness, the lack of light. And you go into a lighted gym and there's a festive feel to it, a celebratory feel to it when people engage in a really hotly contested basketball game. I find it wonderfully exhilarating and inspiring.
And yet, not to be negative, and I think one of the points you make in the book is that it is not so much that what is done here versus the NCAA and the championship and the right now we're in the Sweet 16 of what's happening there. Maybe not that it's better, but it certainly is a lot different. And because right now there's tremendous pressure on these kids and on these programs, and I think what's interesting that you make the point is that okay, but we seem to focus on that more than this. Like it would be great if a program like that could be as successful just because of what it's accomplishing, as instead of, you know, maybe we're watching this kid because someday he'll play for the Lakers.
Yes, well, the college athletics have just become too commercialized, Joe. When you have football and basketball coaches making $5.5 and $6 million in states where the literacy rates are low, I think you have a problem with your priorities and your values. I think that
what does Jones make? I'm sorry.
I don't know. You have to ask him.
Okay.
But if I were to guess, I would say probably about $200,000 or $300,000 a year,
okay,
as the head coach. But as I say, other head coaches make $5.5 million, and I think that's excessive. I think that's an odd value to place on what is ostensibly amateur athletics.
When it comes to that idea of amateur and professional, you still have a group here that probably, have any of these kids ever gone on to?
Oh, yes. Chris Dudley was a Yalie who played for, I think, 8 years in the NBA. And, of course, Bill Bradley was the great star of Princeton who went on. Brian Taylor was another great star at Princeton. And now we have Jeremy Lin down with the Rockets, the Houston Rockets. So that's my point. The athletes in the Ivy League are real and talented athletes, no question. And many of them could play. A young man from Cornell had a year of graduate eligibility left and started this year as forward for Purdue. So that shows, and that's the Big Ten. So that shows you that the athletes are up to snuff. They might not be the actual blue chippers just putting in 1 year before they get into the NBA draft, but many of them are very talented and can play at the professional level. And a great deal of athletes from the Ivy League basketball players end up in the European leagues.
And they have to get into Yale, right? They have to have the grades to get in. They have to get into Yale first. It's not like Yale is getting them because of their athletic
abilities. No, they have
to
meet the academic standards. And that's my point about the Ivy League. It still has, I think, the right priorities when it comes to athletics taking precedence, taking precedence over athletics. I think that's important, that the education comes first and the sports come second.
And this doesn't, and obviously this is done in other programs. I mean, where it doesn't have to be the Ivy Leagues where that's the importance, but not the schools that are playing in at the top ranks of the NCAA. Right.
Well, the strength of America is its educational system and its collegiate system. When I was editing Len Dayton, he said, as Joe Liebling had said during World War II, that the great state universities of America had prepared the pilots and the navigators and all the people that needed technical training in order to win that war. And it's America has always had that facility of making education available and starting in community colleges and on up to the highest universities in the land. So it doesn't denigrate these other schools. You can go to the University of Iowa School for Writing and be right where you should be. Or you can go to Carnegie Mellon and study computer science. All these schools are great. They play good basketball, even at Division III levels. And you can go, I mean, there aren't finer schools than Duke and Stanford and Northwestern and Rice and Vanderbilt and schools like that. But I think that there's too much commercial emphasis in many of the other leagues now that the TV contracts are so lucrative.
Tell us a little bit about, you told us a little bit about his brother and so forth, but tell us a little bit about James Jones. He's a relatively young guy.
Yes, he is. Well, he just turned 50, in fact, and he's a man who has a good education. He went right here to Albany,
yep,
where he got his bachelor's degree. He got his master's degree also at Albany. He's educated. He's composed. He's brilliant. He's responsible. He takes his responsibilities to the kids very seriously.
He was an assistant coach here at Albany as well, right?
That's right, yes. He was under the legendary Doc Sowers,
yeah,
who did such a great job here and is in the 700 Wins Club in college basketball coaching. And, in fact, Coach Jones just became the winningest coach in the Yale basketball history when we beat when Yale beat Holy Cross on Saturday. He's a wonderful man. He exercises good judgment. He doesn't fly off the handle. He instills good values. He seems to mentor kids in a really profound and deep and committed way. And I think that is the first priority for any coach.
He coached for a brief time at Ohio. Did that give him an idea of sort of what the other? What it was like and sort of what he wanted to do in his own program when he went back to Yale.
Yes, he told me he liked his time at Mac. He coached at Ohio University in Athens, Ohio for a few years. And I think the Mac is another good conference. And it's a conference where I think there's some balance between the commercial and the amateur aspects of intercollegiate sports.
When do you see him, does he... I guess I'm curious as to like his aspirations of you know, you always think of athletes and coaches of looking for the next team, looking at the next opportunity, you want to move up. And do you see that in him, or does he seem very happy where he is?
It seems to me that James is very committed to Yale, to his family, and to his educational responsibilities to his recruits. I don't think he's a puddle. I don't think he's a job hopper. I don't think he's looking for the next big thing. I could be wrong on that, but I think he has a full-time commitment to his job at Yale and loves Yale and loves the community. And he, his wife, and his two children seem to prosper and flourish there. So I think he would take into consideration his family if he were offered another job.
You slipped
a more lucrative job.
Right.
Yeah.
You slipped a moment ago and said that when we won. So, yes. I mean, it's very much part of this book was to be the we, to be part of that we.
Well, I talked to my friend Bill Reynolds, who did Fall River Dreams, where he covered a high school team for a season.
Yeah.
And what happens is, Joe, you become fully identified. I became fully identified with the kids. I thought about the games. I thought about the games 5 days before we played them. I thought about the strategies. I went up and down with them emotionally. And I did become totally identified with Yale. And in the book, I go from calling Coach Jones, which is sort of a journalistic obligation, to calling him James from about the middle of the book on. And I also stopped saying Yale and start saying we. So it was just a natural transition. I certainly felt part of the team. I felt like part of the coaching staff. And I had, in many ways, the time of my life.
Do you extricate yourself from that, or once a Bulldog, always a Bulldog?
I'm having difficulty extricating myself. I'll be in Levy and Jim tomorrow night for the game with Columbia.
Yeah.
And I just feel like it's one of the reporters said to me he thinks I've become addicted to Yale basketball, which may well be the truth. I don't know. but my other responsibilities sometimes take precedence, my family and my job.
When you hand the book over to Coach Jones and he looks at it, what kind of response do you get?
Coach Jones is a closed-mouthed man. He just told me I'd done a good job, and that was it. That was it for him.
And that's probably good enough, right?
Yes. It's good enough for me. Yeah, yes. That's... It thrilled me, Joe.
Don't go asking for trouble. Ed Breslin's new book is The Divine Nature of Basketball, My Season Inside the Ivy League. I read this just as the tournament was starting, and it's just such a great book to read while you're in between watching games, and it's an awful lot of fun. I congratulate you on a great job, and I thank you so much for being with us.
Well, thank you for having me, Joe.
Are you doing any events? Are you around town around at all, or...?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
No.
All right.
No.
I just wanted to give you a plug, but we'll plug the book instead. It's The Divine Nature of Basketball. Ed Breslin is our dear friend. And Ed, always good to see you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Joe.
Appreciate it. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.